Get closer to Irish rugby with News Talk and Vodafone, official sponsor of the Irish rugby team.
We'll have Brian O'Driscoll and Gavin Comiskey in the studio very shortly. 16 minutes gone at this stage now. Leicester 0, Liverpool 0. And I'm delighted to say Conor O'Shea has made some time for us. I'm sure you're a very busy man, Conor. We'll start with Eddie Jones's post-match reaction at Twickenham on Saturday. Have a listen.
Okay, remember Trevor Chappell? Bowled underarm along the ground. Couldn't hit the ball for six, so we saw a Trevor Chappell game of rugby today. So it wasn't a game of rugby, we still haven't played a game. So we might go out and train now. If you want to come and watch it, come and watch it. Because we haven't played rugby yet. Congratulations to Italy. I thought they were brilliant in the execution. But if that's rugby, then I'm going to retire. That's not rugby. Like, your halfback can't pass the ball, then there's something wrong with the game. Yeah, and you look in the pass and all you see there is one of their players. So could we have adjusted even quicker? Possibly, but it's difficult. You know, the referee got flustered as well. It was difficult for him. You know, all of a sudden, everything's like this. Everything's like this. Nothing's a ruck. So we lost the ruck from the game. And when you lose a primary contest from the game, it changes the game considerably. And it ceases to become rugby. So if you paid for your ticket, ask for your money back. I would be. BBC are asking for their money back. I'll have to give my money back to Ian Ritchie because no one's had rugby yet.
What's your reaction to that, Conor?
Yeah, you just laugh. You know, my first reaction is we're disappointed to lose because we gave ourselves a chance 70 minutes into the game or 17-15. I think Eddie wanted to quote him, wanted to take Italy to the cleaners. Mm. And we wanted to get a bit of respect. And thought when Owen Farrell started kicking for goal as opposed to kicking to the corner, we got that respect. And we're disappointed, but we know we've staging post along the way. We've a long, hard journey to change around Italian rugby. But I thought hopefully people can see that we're trying, we're looking to change. And when Australia, I think I've said it many times already since the game, when Australia did it to Ireland with David Pocock, our Wasps scored a winning try against Toulouse, his tactical genius. When Italy do it, you're not allowed to do it. We played to the laws. Yeah. We were badly and harshly done by in the first game for anyone who actually knows the laws. This time we were completely legal and we went to try and win a game. We attacked off scrums, we drove off lineouts, we kicked the corners. But we know we have a long way to go to match a side as good as England and indeed Ireland, but we'll get there.
This happens all the time when big teams are frustrated by small teams right across sport. There is a sense that you should come and have your tummies tickled, I think was the phrase you used, and just be good sporting boys and let them beat you because they're better.
Yeah, but you know, we didn't do anything. That's not the law. That's the bit that baffles me with all of this. We sat down with the ref on Friday. We had practiced it all week. We had talked about it because it was different, not just to do it once or twice, but just to do it all the time. And we asked the players to stick to that. But when you actually looked at the way we played, we didn't go and roll over. We didn't not try and play with ball in hand. And I was really proud of the guys' efforts because, you know, this is a tough tournament to change and learn in. And we have to, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to play catch up on a number of nations. But I think hopefully people are, we've basically sick of being put down and sick of people having a go at us. There's a lot we have to change, a lot we have to get right. And if we do things differently, we'll start that process. And, you know, we beat South Africa in November and everyone said it was a terrible South African side. Well, England beat them. It was brilliant for England. Mm. So, you know, we just want a bit of respect. And we didn't get that after Ireland and we didn't deserve it. But hopefully people see we're a pretty proud group. And we know it's a tough tournament for us, but we know that there's some players that you can actually see visibly. People like Andrea Lavotti and Edo Padovani and Michele Campagnaro. Not just your Sergio Parises, and the more these guys play at this level, the better we get the structures that support them. Mm. We'll become a heck of a lot more competitive. So it's a long, hard road, but I take Eddie's thing with a pinch. We met last night. We had a chat after the game. We flopped text messages this morning. There's one thing that said in public, but I think deep down he's probably looking, going, "Hey, did people think they were going to be talking about the Italian tactics going along to yesterday's game? Probably not."
Mm. I'd say there's a grudging respect and frustration that his own captain had to ask the referee, "What am I supposed to do?" did you hear that exchange up in the coaching box? No,
not up in the coaching box. But you know, obviously, people come to you. But listen, it's quite difficult to react on the, you know, in front of 80,000 people, and that's why we said we'd give it a crack. You know, I mean, we had actually questioned the penalty that was not awarded for us. That wasn't the penalty. something Conor Murray did against us in the game in the Stadio, and we just started going, "Oh, right, okay, that's interesting." And then we just started talking it through. And we said, "Well, don't forget this in Australia, Ireland, and don't forget this in." And then we said, "Well, if we go into this match doing what we've always done, we're going to get badly beaten. So let's give hope that we're actually going with a game plan." So we said, "We're going to have a go. We're going to have a crack off scrums. We're going to have a crack off lineouts. We're going to kick into the corners, sometimes turning down kicks at goal, and we're going to have a go. But also in defence, we want the ball back." So the people were questioning our work ethic, and against Ireland, we made 214 tackles. And that's not a team that what we did through phases. We made system errors and got tired, and that's a process to get the fitness levels to the right, so you're making the right decisions all the time. Well, then how do you stop phase rugby in the short term? And we know this will be closed off, but be very careful. People are immediately going, close it off directly, make the offside line the tackle. If you do that, you change the game as well. So a lot of thought has to be. This is not just a quick knee-jerk reaction that needs to be made. This was just us playing the rules, and there are weaknesses. And England exposed those weaknesses in the second half in a 10-minute spell where we didn't cover up what we knew was a weakness to the plan. So that's what rugby is, decision-making. And I was just proud of the effort that the boys put in, to be honest.
Well, I saw Wayne Smith, the All Blacks assistant coach, was on doing television work, and he said, "It's brave. It's a brave team that tries this approach. I think Connor's shown some thinking outside the box. They've been courageous enough to have a crack because there are a lot of potential flaws with the plan." And he says it's not something you can build your game around long term. It has a shock tactic. It has a shock value, really. And so it's not like, "Oh, well, this is the Italian approach for the next 5 years now."
No, not at all. And we know that. But as I said, you know, we made the 214 tackles against Ireland, made 88% of our tackles. We made 167 against Wales. We made 90% of our tackles. The problem within the system isn't the fellas not making tackles or working hard. It's as we get further and further through phases, we might make a wrong decision. Yeah. And it's trying to limit that in the short term as we get fitter, and we will. So, listen, we're ultimately disappointed because, you know, we know that we have to learn in a very hard tournament, but there's a real buy-in, and as you can see in the players, that it's a process to change Italian rugby. And we're not going to be competing. We might be able to get big wins, but competing consistently, yes. But if we make the right decisions, and I said to the players and to some of the senior people last night, we have to make change. If we don't, we won't get anywhere. But what we've got is an unbelievably proud group of people who, these players deserve more support than they get, and they deserve a heck of a lot than the shoeing they seem to be getting every time they do something. That's probably why I reacted, because, you know, as I said, Australia and Wasps and Waikato Chiefs do this, and it's tactical genius. We do it, and it's not allowed.
Well, I saw Nigel Owens mentioned even the Dragons did it at times against Connacht recently, and there's Wasps to lose as well. I think you might have mentioned that example. Like, the shoeing, I thought, was way over the top. It was just out of proportion to what was going on. Matt Dawson, well done, Italy, on ruining this international. Now World Rugby have to change the laws because of your inability to compete at this level. And he had a hashtag, shame on you, Connor, going. I had to double check hadn't done something else.
No, I'll sit down with Dawson at some stage, because actually most people have been incredibly supportive. And if he's so technically brilliant at the game, maybe he can review the Welsh game and actually come back and apologise to us for what happened to us in that game. Mm. So I take it with a pinch of salt. That's a bloke who just likes a quick headline. So it's easy to get. But I was just proud of the way mentally our players actually showed, because we need support and the game needs to expand. It doesn't need to contract. It doesn't need to get a bat every time somebody is having a hard time and go, "We've got loads of money, so we don't want you to succeed," because it'll kill the game. And I won't be in Italy in 10 years' time, but I'd like to leave and have made a difference. But I also will always love the game, and I want the game to actually grow. So hopefully we get something to talk about, because I don't think people were thinking they were going to be talking about England and Italy after this weekend.
And no,
nice to have made them think.
When you mentioned it to Roman Poit in the build-up the day before, the Friday, did he try and dissuade you? Did he say, "Oh, I'm not sure about this"?
No, no, I've told it's the law. So we just said, listen, I talked to my brother during the week just to say, just be prepared when you fly over that you might hear a few boos, because I knew what the reaction would be. But they did change something midweek, because if this had happened a week ago, we could have actually played the nine when you picked the ball up from just outside the meter. But they changed that, so that was the only. So we had to slightly amend on the Friday with a a couple of our key decision makers in this, because not all of the people were doing it. So, you know, we have normal defenders, and then we had these other people, the rogues, the foxes, as we nicknamed them. So that's what we had. And he was brilliant. I could see him kind of go, oh, it's going to be a fun international. But I thought he handled it brilliantly, and he's probably got one of the Nigel Owens quotes now out in the stratosphere forevermore as well, where he talked to Dane Castle. So I thought he was brilliant, and it's a tough job refereeing, but he did a brilliant job.
Can I ask you two last questions then?
Yeah.
Did any small part of you think in the build-up, or even in that opening 15 minutes, and I'm not even necessarily sure if this is the right word to use, but did you think to yourself, God, I wonder, is this in any way unbecoming?
No, not even remotely. My worry was it wasn't going to work. That was my worry.
Yeah. And then a last point, you said the game needs to be expanded. I saw during the week, rather than a relegation situation in the Six Nations, you think it should be expanded, and Georgia, if they pass all the protocol, should be invited in, and we should expand the game. And I certainly saw the merit in that. Would that play havoc with the domestic situation? Like, how long can a Six Nations or a Seven Nations tournament go on for? You know, there is maybe merit in a relegation.
Yeah, I think I am about expansion, because you can actually kill off games with a, and this is not me speaking as a passionate Italian, because by the time any of these debates happen, I'd be, you know, hopefully just holidaying and enjoying my time in Italy as opposed to being there, because it's a long way off from happening. Mm. But I do believe in expansion, and the driver of the game is international rugby. Yes, the club game is expanding, which is brilliant, but the real driver is international rugby. And we don't want to see that contract, because if you contract it in the longer term, people will get bored. If you know the result, people will get bored. And that's what we have to try and do. We have to become more competitive and start, you know, challenging bigger, you know, the bigger teams on a regular basis. That's our challenge in the next few years. And, you know, Georgia, by right, I mean, like, Italy have beaten teams, Five Nations teams, before they got into the Six Nations. And Georgia have yet to beat a Tier 1 side. And, you know, so there's this staging post that they'll have. But I think Milton Hague has done a brilliant job there. I'd like to see Romania be stronger again, like we'd like to see when Germany start playing or Spain start playing. So to me, it's growing a game that we're about, because if you love the game, that's what it is. And I just, you know, I think we're very lucky in Ireland, because we've got the most unbelievable system in place now. But we have to make sure that other countries can get to that level over time. And hopefully I can have some impact on that in Italy.
Sure. Was the reaction in Italy favourable?
I think, What do people want to see? And what disappointed me was, you know, I said 214 tackles. It wasn't the team that tried. We were a heck of a lot better than we were against, and I didn't even feel we got the scoreline was pretty harsh on us against Ireland. But people want to see players playing with their heart on their sleeve. You can't kid people. And what they saw yesterday was a team that fought for their country and ultimately came up short. But, you know, hopefully, it's another stage in post, just like to win little victories in terms of changing people's perception about Italy and Italian rugby, and we'll get there over time.
Yeah, well, listen, we'll be watching in 2 weeks' time to see what you dream up. In the meantime, thanks so much for your time.
Cheers, no worries.
Now, 19 points to 9 at the Aviva on Saturday. Joe Schmidt has still never lost a Six Nations match at home. The hunt for a third Six Nations in 4 years continues. We're joined by Gavin Comiskey of the Irish Times and a legend of Irish rugby as well.
There's f***ing no one here over 60, Woody. No one remembers when you played, so shut the f*** up.
No, not that legend of Irish rugby.
Fricko, the wheels were gone at that stage. That's why you're in at 12.
That legend of Irish rugby, Brian O'Driscoll.
How are you?
He's some boy.
He certainly is. He was in rare old form. You sensed when he was late, you know, going in after listening to it on the radio, that there's two ways he could go. He could take his beating, or he could come out with his knife sharpened.
Yeah. The knife came.
The latter very much was evident on the night.
He lied during the ad break about pretending he'd forgotten he was on radio as well with those F-bombs. I mean, you don't come in and forget you're on the radio.
That's the beauty, Rog. He doesn't have the filter.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have the filter. I think that's why he's media gold. That's why he gets himself in trouble too.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was great fun. It was a laugh. Yeah, it was. I think when you're doing it in a relaxed atmosphere with good friends and people that, you know, you've had some great times with, you know, you can get stuck into one another and know that there's no inadvertent digs going on. It's, I think, when the relationship is like that, it's just a laugh.
Yeah, there was a manic quality to it because of the Storm Doris, in that we had planned to have you and Dunica together on your own. So at one point, Dunica was there, Rog was there, Keith Wood was there, and I looked down just to see what the plan was. Jerry and I had talked to you about it beforehand, and the first thing was Brian and Dunica played together at the Under-19s World Championship. So there was no sense of where we're going in the entire interview.
Yeah, we never got there. We never covered. I don't think we ever covered any of that. But
people
yeah,
just shouting.
That's it's like a good night out. Mm. You know, it's the impromptu ones are always the best.
It sounded like that anyway.
So talk to us about Saturday. Firstly, we'll get on to Conor O'Shea and what Wales we're going to see in a fortnight. I was struck, Gavin Cumsky, in the crowd, just as a fan, how quiet it all was. I think there was this deep sense of confidence everyone had that we're going to be fine here.
Yeah, I remember looking at the scoreboard and not being worried, even when it was like right back into it, even when it was like they closed the gap and it was 16-9. Mm. I had no worries because of, well, from that, when he put that drop goal over in the 50th minute, knowing there was an advantage, I was like, okay, yeah, that's really great to have him there. And then,
I think it felt like more, you know, it felt like a bigger differential than seven because of how the game had been panning out, because we were the ones that were building all the pressure in the territory and they were waiting for individual brilliance or a massive error to make their inroads and to get up the other end of the pitch. I don't think they at any stage were really, you know, save for the first 10 or 15 minutes where their intensity was brilliant and they really brought the game to us.
We nearly
for
fell the rest away from them there, didn't they? They could have scored two tries.
Yeah, they could have, but you know, our scramble was brilliant. We'll come to that again. Okay. But I think they had to pull a rabbit out of a hat to beat us because we were defensively on our game. And also, I think we had their number for the most part. And that's why I never, you know, when we were 3 or 6 points up at times, it felt like more than that.
Yeah.
It felt like they weren't. Once we rode that early storm, I never felt like we were going to get beaten.
Yeah,
and it's the benefit of the first 20 minutes in Murrayfield again. They did bottle that. Disgust, I think, was what they had with some of the things they did there, and I think that was saved up as well.
Yeah,
where they were not going to let that happen anyway, and so there was a lot of that emotional energy, as they call it, which was really evident, I thought, when they were, and Sexton coming back. I just thought it was top. Like, Conor Murray played it nearly close to his Chicago performance, I suppose.
Yeah.
But the two of them back on the pitch, I bang on about it and get slagged for it all the time, but it does seem like anything's possible when the pack gives them that kind of ball.
Mm. Here is Joe Schmidt talking afterwards about Sexton's contribution.
The evidence was that he operated really well today because, you know, they were very tough conditions. And to have someone who everyone has the utmost confidence in. Johnny makes a call, guys immediately respond to it. And Paddy Jackson is growing in that all the time. I think, you know, when he speaks to the group, he has their undivided attention. And so for Johnny, with the experiences that he's had with the group, the way that they have confidence in him because he has navigated us around the pitch so effectively over the last however long, you know, for him to come back in, I wouldn't say it was easy. I think he worked really hard during the week to make sure that he was comfortable, that, you know, he knew what he could anticipate from the French, and he knew what we would be capable of delivering. And even that was a little bit curbed today. Just we kept looking at the weather, and it looked like it was going to maybe rain in the morning and clear up a bit in the afternoon. I don't know if you people saw that, but that's what we were hoping anyway. But it was nice and fine this morning, and that was probably a bad omen because the rain was coming at some stage, and we got enough of it to make conditions pretty tricky.
A point you and others have made, Brian, is that there's no doubting Jackson's improving as a player, but it's just so evident when you see Sexton commanding the whole environment on Saturday. He's just at a different level.
I just think there's a real comfort with him there.
Yeah.
We had Sean O'Brien on the show in here a few weeks back, and I think there's certain names that you see on the team sheet when you're playing with them and you feel the stronger for it. And Johnny is probably number one in that regard. Paddy Jackson has done extremely well over the last year or so. Mm. And you know, someone put the question to me, what message does it send out to Paddy Jackson? This was on Twitter, that, you know, Johnny Sexton comes back in after Paddy doing so well against Italy.
Yeah.
I think the message says is you're second best to a world-class player.
Yeah, but look, here's the standard. And, it's not a bad thing.
And like, there's a gap. It's not like it's neck and neck and, you know, Sexton by a nose. He's a good bit better.
Because there was a moment when the camera cut to Jackson on the subs bench after Sexton had kicked the drop goal, and I was thinking, no, TV directors, we're not there yet. No. That's not where we are.
I was fine with Rog and Johnny. Yeah. But no, we're not there yet.
Do you know what I was even thinking? I was thinking like somebody like Beauden Barrett's watching that game going, I can learn from this, you know, like the world player of the year, probably the best 10 in the world right now. And he's looking at it going, okay, that's the master there.
Yeah. What's the best thing if you have to boil it down?
For me, it's his small, his realization when the need to kick the ball. Like sometimes I think Ireland play too much in their own third and their exits, you know, they back themselves to go through a lot of phases to put themselves in the best position to exit properly. But I thought what I was really impressed was when they were further up the field and they were banging away and nothing was really happening, his decisions to go to the air, to go kick contest, or another time he got a nothing ball and that little dink, you know, end over end dink into the corner just to keep his pack going forward. I think his decision making was excellent, save for that one kick out on the full. He didn't do a whole lot wrong. And when it's not on, you sometimes just have to set up the next phase to then build thereafter. He doesn't try and pull a rabbit out of a hat and create something out of nothing. He'll comfortably realise that it's a tough defensive line, go with the hard option, someone sent into traffic, and then he'll build the next phase after that.
He still makes us all cringe, made the whole stadium cringe when he's hitting rooks in the last 20 minutes. They're like, will he stop?
I love his bravery, though.
It is brilliant, but then he's barely trying to drag himself up as usual, you know. Turning point in the game, I thought, was, I was scribbling it down, France, Slimani just got two penalties off Jack McGrath, and clearly it looked like he was scrummaging illegally. Jack McGrath has a quick chat to the ref.
Yeah.
And Johnny throws the loop move that is like his trademark. But it was a bit different. I'd love to get your take on it, because Rob seemed to run that harder line. Henshaw was in front. Ringrose run, took the loop and gave it back to him. So
if you look, we looked at an analysis at half time, and Fiku actually takes no man. So he doesn't take the short runner, or he doesn't take Johnny out the back. So he's done either way.
Right,
and he's scrambling then to try and
then
catch
he scrambles. No, he does really well, and he's got a lot of toe to get back out there and have some effect. Mm. But you know, that is a Johnny Sexton play. It's a Leinster and Ireland play for years, and lovely, really quick hands from Gary Ringrose. Beautiful line, short line, and then Johnny out the back. If you're splitting hairs, could Keith Earls have run a shorter line, you know, knowing that Johnny couldn't get the pass him? Hugier did quite well. But again, a good, effectual kick forced the 5 metre scrum where they scored, where Conor Murray scored his try from. Mm-hmm. So all of it was just really simple, effective rugby, you know, isolating defenders and then picking the right option more often than not.
I'm watching it, and I'm watching around the middle third. We have lots of nice switch plays and pretty patterns, and it's pre-orchestrated. And we don't make huge yardage as a result of it. So I'm wondering, and the question I was looking forward to asking you was, do you think we're on the precipice of really cutting some teams open with all these moves? Or are defences these days, even the French defence, they're just so good that we're always not going to make huge yardage off those moves?
I think there's a bit of both in that. I think if you get a really dry day on Saturday, Gary Ringrose makes those half breaks, because that's the difference between a scrag and being dragged back. I thought he had an 8 out of 10 game. Mm-hmm. I thought he was really, really good. The two centres.
Was it his best game for Ireland, maybe?
Overall,
other than
his... There was one missed tackle on Fiku early on that led to the Seron break. Mm.
And he was bumped another time.
Where he actually just came up really hard, and probably his aggressive line speed worked against him. Mm. But other than that, I thought, you know, it wasn't one for... you know, the pretty outside centre. It was a roll your sleeves up and in heavy traffic. Yeah. And he still looks wiry, and you know, his frame needs some size, but he packs a punch still, and he's aggressive in his carry.
People are, like, I think incorrectly were making a debate about Paddy Jackson and Sexton. Jared Payne's on the bench for Ulster now. He's going to get a couple of games. Do you think Joe will consider it, even number 23, or even considered bringing Jared Payne, who he's built so much around in the last few years, back into the team?
I think Gary Ringrose is the 13 now.
It's done, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's the 13. Yeah. I think defensively, I think he, you know, I get the impression Joe's pretty happy with him.
Okay.
I think he has the ability now to, whether it's him doing it off his own bat or whether Andy Farrell's allowing him to show up hard, almost blitz on his own on occasion, forcing first and second receivers into bad loopy passes or going back inside. I love that as a player, yeah, growing with confidence in being willing to take that defensive system into his own hands as well. And
because that's surprising that you're that sure, because it seemed to me like very recent history we were talking about the inexperience and the maybe the lack of communication in that part of the field defensively.
He's a great game. He's the only guy who was like threatened, as you said yourself, to tear France up.
Sure, I'm just thinking of Payne's reputation as the defensive leader.
Yeah, but if you take that first few minutes in isolation in the first game against Scotland, yeah, the Hogg first try certainly wasn't his fault. He, you know, they were massively numbered on the blind side when there was no attack there. So he was left to hang out to dry because there was Seymour out in the wing as well. He had to kind of think about a cover kick
as well.
Seymour
and Carney were in. In fairness, they were inside working hard, but not out in their positions.
Yeah. And then the second Hogg try was a little bit naive, where he got caught off the five man line out, where he went to try and rip the boy. He stayed in the tackle too long. You know, Robbie Henshaw had affected us. He needed to bounce back out and get to the edge.
He doesn't make the same mistake twice, does he?
No, I think he's a smart guy. Yeah. And you need to learn from these things. He's 21 or 22 years of age. The only way of actually getting better at those is by making a mistake sometimes. And sometimes you get away with it, and other times you're really punished by it.
We had Johnny Murphy in yesterday, and even just he was walking out. I'm sure he won't mind me saying it on air, but even just the break, we were continuing to talk about Payne, because Payne had just come on at that stage and got his 15 minutes. And he was saying, you know, Payne gets another run out next week and gets into camp. There are certain guys Joe hangs his hat on.
What about the bench, maybe? Is 23 an option there for Jared Payne? Or?
Yeah, he's a good bench player. Yeah. Like,
We're hearing Rob Kearney, they're confident he will come back and be fit.
Yeah, you know what? Payne added a great dimension during the summer at 15. In the future, that might be his position.
Okay.
Rob Kearney's had some big performances when he's needed to over the last couple
of months. It was his position when he was a Kiwi. Before he was an Irishman, Jared Payne was a fullback.
Someone called me on it a while ago about, you know, saying that he wasn't a 13. Well, his Twitter handle's the Payne 15, so it's not the Payne 13.
Yeah. No, you retired, so basically, and they're going, so we're going to naturalise.
So he
you.
Sees himself as a 15, and that's I believe it's his preferred position.
Any other, before we jump off and talk about the other games, anything else worth mentioning? The decision-making has been, I don't think it was a big issue, but were there any points where the captain inside you thought, oh, I might have taken the points there?
No, I think...
Happy enough.
Yeah, I think you've got, you know, I saw the panel on RT questioned whether Rog would have grabbed the ball and insisted on kicking the points.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like the balls. You know, sometimes if you're telling God, you know what? No, we have them on the rack here.
Right.
The tap penalty just before half time. It was a good option. If Earlsey actually stays out, Jamie has a one-on-one with Cyril Bai. Interesting. Hougei, if he stays out rather than comes underneath him, I wouldn't shoot him for that either.
It was like 2011 against England when they were coming for the Grand Slam. He just tapped and goes. And he was making a statement. He was laying down a marker more than anything.
Yeah, I like that. It's just high energy. It's like, you know what? We're not going to, let's not just win this by, you know, kicking them to death. You know, we're here to play.
Yeah. The intent is there.
And that's what you get. You know, I've got, there's death stares from him if you're a winger and you're not awake to the possibilities of a tap penalty being had.
Yeah.
Just one final thing on top of it. The set piece in really difficult conditions was pretty good, save for the couple of penalties they gave away.
100% from the line out,
you know, that's brilliant first phase possession for you.
Yeah.
I thought the Maul was back playing a big role again, and I think our scrum is something to be proud of these days, particularly when Slimini's not going to be there, you know, messing about.
Yeah, you just mentioned on the way in, you watched the video back today, and on the whole, you were far more impressed than you had been in real time.
Yeah, I was really impressed with watching it again today. I thought, even that first 15, 20 minutes when they came at us, you know, there was no backward steps. And as I mentioned earlier, I thought our scramble was excellent.
Right.
And, you know, more often than not, Conor Murray.
Well, I was in the crowd, as I said, and I walking out with my dad, I said, wasn't great, was it? He was like, nah. thinking, how have we got to this point where we're not even impressed with routine wins over the French in this?
Oh, we got to be.
It's outrageous.
That's
like,
terrible.
Like a record
like
win.
It's
like
not
for
good enough.
Like 20 or 25 years.
Yeah. Never beaten them by this much.
I know, but I think a huge percentage of the crowd was a little bit, grand.
That's a terrible set of standard now where the expectation
it's
is.
The biggest that, inadvertent compliment ever. Yeah, but, you know, but it's just, there's got to be, you know, a reality check as well.
I know,
as to where we're at.
But I just think everyone thought we're going to win. Oh, there's a kick and chase after this box kick. I don't need to stand up and say, go on.
I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure how good France
watch
are.
Watch how it all transpired.
I thought France were just about, okay, they still think their best performance was probably the first half in Twickenham.
Yeah.
Of so far. But, like, I wasn't sure how good they were. But we just reinforced the fact that we're a better team than them.
Yeah. It's amazing, really. So, Matt Dawson tried to get the hashtag shame on you, Connor trending yesterday.
Yeah, that was foolish.
Well done on ruining an international game, he said. We played Eddie Jones to Conor O'Shea, who we've just done the show. Conor said, you can only laugh at that reaction. He said not even one bit of him thought it was unbecoming or the wrong thing to do or an affront on the game. We can't just turn up and have our tummies tickled, is his general sense.
Yeah, he said, we don't want to lose by 100. Yeah. I actually tweeted earlier on, it's brilliant, his explanation. Brendan, they had a conversation about an incident from the Ireland-Italy game about this coming in and crowding the scrum halves.
Yeah.
And it was clarified that they could do this. And Conor Shea goes, Brendan Venter, who's the Springboks are trying to take home now, he is one of the best defence coaches in the world and the Saracens record and all that. He just sat him down and he goes, please, can we do this? Can we go to Twickenham and ruin this game so we have a chance of winning? And like, I've no problem with that. Eddie Jones said it's not rugby, called it a disgrace, compared it to the Trevor Chappell cricket incident of underarm bowling. But I thought it was just, they went there to survive, or at least to make it competitive. Otherwise, the handicap was definitely getting smashed. You know?
It was intriguing.
Yeah.
Because I've seen it before, you know, done the odd time by the team, the Chiefs then in Super Rugby do it.
Nigel Owens was saying the Dragons did it a bit against Connacht just the other week.
Okay.
So it's going
France
on.
Tried it a few times, but Picamoles got grabbed by Henshaw, so it became a ruck. Slimani was coming around at least once in the game. So people are aware of it now. And so Mike Catt, Brendan Venter and McConnor say that we're going back to Twickenham.
England played poorly, right? They played poorly because they weren't able to adapt to it. You know, there were a lot of, errors.
Would it be difficult to adapt to it? Can you imagine being in that position in the first 5-10 minutes? Would it be easy to get a team together and
did
go?
Did you hear Haskell?
Yeah.
Haskell was gas. But basically what he kept saying was, can we drag them? His whole thing was, so they did understand, they're looking for clever. He's like, can we drag them into the ruck?
Yeah.
And eventually they just start picking and going through them. They start going up the guts to win. The only way we're going to get our bonus point here is going up the guts.
Is 40 minutes a long time to realise to go up the guts though?
Yeah, it is. And like, surely there's messaging coming on. There's lots of times for, you know, breaks in play where water carriers are bringing messages on from.
Oh, so their captain's not nailed on. He's not a nailed on starter anymore, I don't think. So it could be a problem.
Yeah, but messaging should be coming on from the forwards coach or from Eddie Jones that this is what we need to do.
Yeah.
Stop trying to still play. They're trying to not play, so play them at their own game. Just pick and jam, pick and jam, pick and jam. Mm. Because if you're not creating any rucks, you're fanning out. That's where the softest place is, through the middle of the ruck.
Yeah.
They should have known. They shouldn't have had to take 40 minutes for that to for the penny to drop.
Yeah, and they weren't good generally, you didn't feel?
No, they weren't. Some of the tries were they easily came by in the second half. So they showed a bit of their potency, but that first half I thought they were disappointing. Besides their head being muddled with what was going on, I didn't think that they seen themselves. They haven't really been their best, far from their best, in this year's Six Nations, which it almost is exciting because Scotland will fancy their chances going to Twickenham.
Yeah, I think that's a game there.
That's on.
Yeah,
and then come Paddy's weekend here, if they have a slam to play for, I wouldn't be afraid of this current England team. Last year, maybe a bit more. This current one, not so much.
Mm.
But when they to try to put them 17-10 up, which looked like the game, and then brilliantly, actually, Campagnaro came back at them with another try. But it was Kerr to Laws, offload to Ford, quick offload to Kerr. After Haskell and Itoje had gone up the guts, it was off three different offloads from three really direct, quick thinking rugby before Ben Teo's lovely outside centre pass to put in Elliot Daly, who's just an absolute speedster. That was them in full flow. So there's still sparks of how good a team they actually are. They're just not putting it together.
But then, they shouldn't have been letting Danny Kerr in for his try,
Yeah, the little quick tap,
6 or 7 metres out, you know.
O'Shea was saying, well, it was Wayne Smith, the assistant All Blacks coach, was saying, you know, fair play to them for doing it. And it's a shock tactic. It has shock value, but it's not something you can build a game plan around. And Conor O'Shea was laughing when we said, will you be doing this? Is this now the Italian way? And not quite. I presume that's it's one of those one-off things. Could it get to a point where, I don't know, a bit like Irish players recognising a choke tackle situation, there could be certain patterns or calls that they would see and they'd spot the moment to do it, and it could be kind of an intermittent part of a game.
Well, they're already looking at the rules around this already. Yeah. Like,
O'Shea was saying it would be very difficult to... It could be tricky closing this off. There could be some unintended consequences.
So there was trial rules in Mitre 10 in New Zealand
last
year where that you couldn't do that because the first offensive player to the tackle breakdown after the tackle, he is the offside line. So it didn't matter if the other people, the defence didn't engage. So it effectively became a ruck. There was an offside line. And like the Maoris then they said they lost in Thomond Park because they were playing under those rules. But basically it was to eradicate jackling from the game. Mm. More or less did.
Yeah.
Because there was a fear that was too dangerous. So I don't think these trials are going to be adopted. But the Maoris claimed that Munster beat them in November because of this. And that was their main complaint. So it does bring up the topic of this. And Eddie Jones's point was it's not in the spirit of the game. Him of all people saying that, I thought was quite funny, like, because he'd try anything to win a game.
So this is the thing, you know, it would be tactical genius if it had been him that had come up with it, you know,
because of
the reputation.
I bet you he'll go and do it now, you know that.
Whereas, you can't have it every way.
Yeah.
And I thought it was genius by the Italian coaching ticket, I have to say. They were going to get absolutely beaten out the gate.
Yeah.
And they did something to put it through a spanner in the works, and they stopped that from happening. And I don't care whether it's not perceived as rugby. They, within the letter of the law, beat England they outthought them. And I think Eddie Jones would probably be a bit embarrassed by what happened in that.
Sure, he went straight into offensive mode. Before the dictaphones had even been switched on at the press conference afterwards, he was like, you should all have your money back. Like journalists obviously don't pay into the game, and he was like, "You all need to get your money back. Well, there should be a refund.
Well, I think
BBC should be giving people their money back and all this."
In doing that, Jones eliminates the first question, which is, "Why didn't you guys react better?
Yeah.
You know, what happened out there? Why weren't you ready for that?"
He got very snappy when that was put to him. It took so long. And he goes, he does the usual, what's your name, to the journalists. You know
it's Alistair Campbell PR. Mm. Something bad has happened. Oh. Create a bigger shitstorm, which is the game is in ruins.
Mm. Yeah, he's brilliant at it.
That's what he did.
And he went on the offensive. He went on the offensive with Scotland already.
We had case studies on the Lions in 2005 about that happening. You know, what happens if a story breaks that you don't want breaking?
Yeah.
You create another one.
Yeah.
What did Alistair create?
So Scotland-Wales then, this was 13-9 to Wales at half-time and Scotland come out and win the second half 20-0. Are we going to see a galvanised, brilliant Wales in 2 weeks' time, or are we now looking at this team and thinking they're actually very limited?
I wonder, I was speaking to Gareth Thomas at the Ireland game and they were obviously watching that in advance. He was wondering whether there was an opportunity now to blood some of the younger players, that introduction of someone like Sam Davis as a starter.
Really?
Which I think would be exciting from a Welsh perspective. I think they've just become a small bit predictable. I like Dan Biggar as a player, but Sam Davis has something special to him. And he's got this creative influence that I don't think we've seen at 10 for quite some time in Wales. And I think, you know, he'd been waiting in the wings and maybe this is his opportunity. Thought Reese Webb had a decent game. So they were, you know, I haven't seen the game a second time, so I'm probably not best versed to call it completely. But again, the Scottish pack looked as though they did a job on them.
Yeah,
and Wales didn't take their opportunities when they arose.
Definitely, isn't that a theme with Wales though? But for all the pressure exerted, it's so rarely reflected in the scoreboard, and people are saying, "God, this is the Lions' attack coach as well." And
yeah,
they should be worried.
Well, yeah, you break it down, and I was watching it just before the French game in the Aviva Stadium in the press room, and afterwards, people were kind of like, "That's good, we'll go to Cardiff now," and I was like, "Oh no." So they've blown it in Cardiff against England.
Yeah.
They've gone up there and they've lost to a rejuvenated Scotland and all that.
Yes.
But, oh no, like, this is it. Their entire season is now built on Friday night in Cardiff. I went to Donal Lennon and is this a good or bad result for us? And he was like, you know exactly what we're going to get. It's going to be exact same as last year, where it's just brutal stuff.
Like. Yeah.
Like, they would pride themselves on you know, Six Nations in Cardiff in the Millennium or Principality, whatever they call it now. Yeah. And to the thought of losing both to England and us is unthinkable.
So you're a bit more worried, aren't
you? I would be more worried. Oh, the resistance is going to be, I would be more worried. Planet. I think they will be super pumped for it.
I can imagine the Welsh press for two long weeks in the build up to this game is another thing.
Yeah, he's going to get. I'd say they're going to. Howdy's coming in for it a good bit now, all right, yeah.
Yeah. Indulge me with a cheap and cheerful question. Who was your player of the weekend?
Saren was good, but has to be Conor Murray or Johnny.
Yeah. Gorey was good until he went off injured. I think he was the one causing absolute havoc.
Eddie Jones referenced him, actually. Yeah,
did he? Yeah. But yeah, I think, you know, Conor Murray just had one of those games where everything he touched turned to gold.
Yeah.
Even that little kick to the corner that hit the corner flag and went into touch, like those small moments. I think he feels more confident playing with Johnny as well, and that partnership looks really wicked.
Yeah, he said as much. Whilst talking about Paddy Jackson first for a minute, he then said, look, we've played 30 games together.
Every time you mention Johnny Sexton, you must mention all six Leinster out-halves and all the two in the AIL as well. It's important.
And Conor O'Shea gets our coach of the weekend.
Without a shadow of a doubt. Without a shadow of a doubt.
Brilliant.
Huge, huge credit.
The press conferences are hilarious. Watch what Eddie says, then watch what Conor O'Shea says. It's quality, like.
Yeah. Good stuff, gents. Cam Comiskey, the Irish Times. Thank you. Brian O'Driscoll, thank you.
Cheers.
Off the ball.
Get all the best bits at newstalk.com/offtheball.
Newstalk 106 to 108.